Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
I'm your host, Randall Libero. Well, welcome everyone to 2008. This is my first live show this year. And there are some changes afoot here in how we're going to do this program. And so, first of all, I want to thank everybody for listening to this show for a little over a year and a half now. And thank you for all the attention that you've given to the movies that we profiled on this program and helped to make them successful. Well, today, as always, as we showcase today's top independent and visionary filmmakers whose movies evoke what I call the spirit of film, which again is a metaphor for the movie's power to transform our lives and sometimes awaken us and sometimes shake us up to reality. As in the case of this week's motion picture that we're profiling, and you can find more at spiritoffilm.net, which is my website. It's a film called Beyond Treason. And we have with us today the writer and producer of that motion picture, Ms. Joyce Riley. Joyce, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Randall. It's my pleasure.
Well, if you don't know about Beyond Treason, I'll tell you a little bit about it. It's a very powerful film, and it shows that the Department of Defense documents obtained through the Freedom of Information Act expose the horrific underworld of the disposable army mentality and how government funded experimentation on U.S. citizens has been conducted without their knowledge and consent. So first of all, I'll let Joyce introduce herself and tell a little bit about why she made this motion picture and its purpose of where she'd like to take it. And of course, talking about today's veterans, and which is a very, very important issue and the topic on, I think, on everyone's minds today with the situation over in Iraq. So Joyce, can you first introduce our audience to who you are and talk to them about how and why you made this film?
Thank you, Randall. First of all, I've been a nurse for about 35 years. I have been a registered nurse, a director of nursing of four institutions, have lectured at NIH, done a lot of things in the nursing arena. My last job prior to Desert Storm was a heart, lung, liver, kidney transplant nurse. So I was kind of involved in a lot of other things other than the war. The war came along, and I wanted to return to do my part to take care of wounded servicemen and, you know, the whole off we go into the wild blue yonder thing for the Air Force. I did, and I became quite ill as a result of some vaccines that I took. And after the war, or after my 6 months of flying active duty missions, in which I did not deploy, by the way, to the Persian Gulf, I was on active duty missions from Alaska to Guantanamo. I became quite ill, so ill that I had trouble walking, and I began to ask the question, what happened to me and the other nurses since all we did was fly around in the air in a C-130 for 6 months? You know, we played MASH in the air. I shouldn't be sick, and nor should these other nurses. We began to ask questions. The Department of Defense said, you're not sick. Nobody's sick. Everybody's fine. Thank you very much. And besides that, you're a reservist, so you're not covered by the VA anyway. So I began to look for an answer and found that there were some answers in alternative medicine way outside the mainstream medicine, which is another whole issue. However, I tried to get answers from the Department of Defense, and I was given nothing but stonewalling, and I realized that they were defending too much their position that nobody was sick. So I began to look into the possible reasons why people were sick, and having been a testifying medical malpractice expert witness for 15 years, I kind of knew what it took to build a case. And I began to look at the evidence and the documents, and lo and behold, I found out that the Gulf War was not the first time that there had been problems, that Vietnam was not the first time that our military and troops had been exposed to whatever. And I began to look back and saw other things. So that was sort of the beginning of it. But I have to tell you, Randall, that there was a document. It's 103-97. Now, it's included in the CD-ROM that comes with Beyond Treason. But I saw one statement that changed my life for forever. Senate Report 103-97 states, and I quote, During the past 50 years, hundreds of thousands of our military have been experimented upon without their knowledge or consent. I could not believe what I was reading. I was one of those naive nurses that all I wanted to do was, you know, hear the music played off. We go in the Wild Blue Yonder as we take off in a C-130 and wear my flight suit and be proud that I'm an officer in the Air Force. Well, lo and behold, I was shocked to see that there had been experiments done without consent, which violated everything that this country stands for. That's when I began in earnest to say, Department of Defense, what are you thinking in what you're doing here?
Well, the experimentation, as you start as Beyond Treason begins, it takes us back to the atomic era, and I can remember seeing, especially those films of the soldiers that were out during the testing of the atomic bombs before, of course, they were used in World War II, and they're out there with no protection, just hanging out in the desert. And here's this atomic bomb goes off, and you can see it over their heads in the distance. And I thought, you know, that doesn't look right. Mm-hmm. Something's not right with this picture. And I saw that film years and years ago. I think probably when I was growing up, maybe about 10 or 12 years old. And in your film, you start the story of how our veterans have been, as you just said, experimented on without their knowledge. And it starts off with the atomic age. So talk a little bit about the beginning of your motion picture and the position of beginning with that era in the atomic age.
I think the picture that is most startling is the one where there is a ship. You can see the ship very close to where a detonation occurs. And this ship, as it is just simply, probably these people had no idea that they were even going to be involved in an experiment, but the ship is clearly seen as a bomb is dropped, and the typical fireball kind of effect as it goes up, and you realize these are human lives that are on board that ship, probably not protected, probably not being told what's even happening. Now, as a result of whether it's cleanup of Hiroshima, Nagasaki, whether it's Bikini Atoll, any of the experiments that were done on our military, and there were a lot more than we were ever told about. And of course, all we have to do is go as far as Utah to see some of the experiments that were done on our military and the animals that were done. But what happened was they simply told these troops, you will have no problem, this will not hurt you. They even show in the video, and I was impressed when we were able to find a clip showing literally them brushing off with a broom these troops, brushing the radiation off of them. Oh my gosh, how ignorant we must have treated them, knowing full well that the U.S. has known that radiation is bad since, you know, way back in the 1940s, we've known that. So by purposely putting these people in harm's way, we knew what we were doing. But the beauty of the military is it comes up with another reason why everyone gets sick, and they're doing that today, as you all know. And this one was the smoking of cigarettes. Well, how many of you in the military remember when you got all of your lunch kits on board the aircraft? I don't care if you were on a B-52 or whatever, or a B-17. You got a lunch kit, the flight kits that you took to eat on board, they had cigarettes in them. All of them did. So that was a real good way to say, well, you know, everybody's smoking, so therefore that's the reason they're all getting cancer. There were some 300,000 of our military that were experimented upon in the 1950s and 60s. And yet the U.S. government then said, well, I'm sorry, we don't see any reason, we don't see any compensation claims here that are justified, and probably less than 100 people were ever compensated for atomic injuries. And now these troops are referred to as atomic veterans. The group is dying out because a lot of them were, of course, around World War II era. They never were compensated. Their families had no normal life after that because they had various forms of cancer in their bodies. And here we have now had deformed children born as a result of that. People died early. Widows were devastated. And the government continues to not perform their responsibilities by compensating these troops. So it started out, in my estimation, at least what I know about, way back in the 1950s and 60s with respect to atomic veterans, which has not been that long, obviously. But still, when we start looking at the cumulative number of veterans, we're talking about a huge group of people that have basically been kicked to the side of the road, and thus the name of the book that came out a while back called Waiting for an Army to Die, which is exactly what the Department of Defense does. And I was a former Air Force officer, and I can say that without any hesitation. And I will tell you, Randall, that the DVD that went out just prior to this one called Gulf War Illness, Fact or Fiction, the Department of Defense contacted me personally asking me not to provide that and not to allow that out. So they know who I am, they know what I'm doing, and they're not exactly happy about it. But that's unfortunate that they feel that way, given the fact that we've got thousands and hundreds of thousands of lives of our military that are at stake as we speak.
Well, actually, just in the Vietnam era with Agent Orange, which affected 2.5 million veterans. I mean, that's just one piece of the pie. In the beginning of the film, after the atomic era, you talk about a project called MK Ultra, and you also go into Project White Coat, where the biowarfare research started, and it was actually perpetrated on a particular religious sect of Seventh-day Adventists, which I was not surprised to see, because they for some reason, you know, the government wanted to obviously, you know, look at these people who, because if you know anything about Seventh-day Adventists, they really don't go to doctors. Their religion sort of prohibits that in a way. So obviously they knew that these people wouldn't go check with their doctors. So they'd be very susceptible, both mentally and physically.
Well, you know, what's interesting about Seventh-day Adventists is that they don't drink, they don't smoke, they don't drink coffee, they don't eat meat, and they don't get sick a lot. I mean, they don't have bad habits, they don't do drugs, and so a lot of them are seen as a perfect guinea pig, if you will. And I hate to say that, but the government saw it as the very same way. I mean, there are other religions that would just as soon not fight and die in war. Look at the Mennonites. Look at the Mennonites and the, well,
the
anyway.
Amish.
The Mennonites are the ones that we have primarily around here.
Yeah, the Amish people in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and Amish.
Right.
Thank you. And they are against the war, but they didn't pick those sects. They picked the ones that were pure as the driven snow, pretty much physiologically. Now, I've talked with the people in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and they actually bought into the idea that they were going to do a good thing for their people. They were going to keep them out of war. So they supported it. The Seventh-day Adventist Church supported it. And thus you have, though, Project White Coat, which ended up being done, and it involved, you know, several thousand Seventh-day Adventist troops, many today who are not well as a result of their exposures. Now, the part that I have a problem with is that they were telling them that these are defensive weapon tests that we're trying to protect our troops against. In other words, the bad guys are going to use something against our guys. Therefore, if you will help us to test this, we'll be able to find an antidote against the bad guys. You know, it's always the us versus them scenario that they use. Well, that wasn't the situation. In this case, they were actually testing the offensive weapons to make offensive weapons for this country so that we can use those offensive chemicals and biologicals that we deny that we have or that we use. So this was a sad situation. And let me go, if you don't mind, to Project MK Ultra also. Project MK Ultra was had a subset of 166 projects. And I got a document on this, some of which is on the CD-ROM that comes with Beyond Treason. And the reason we put this on the CD-ROM is I wanted the documents on there so the Department of Defense would not call it conspiracy, would not say I was just trying to, I hate my country or whatever, you know, they like to use.
Right.
Or I'm unpatriotic or whatever it is. And so there is a document called Project MK Ultra, the CIA's Program of Research and Behavior Modification. I happened to find it at a library one time, and lo and behold, it was on microfilm. I wasn't supposed to probably to get access to it, but I did. And it's about a, let me see here, about a 150-page document, which is heavily redacted, of the experiments that were done under these projects. The U.S. government was doing mind control. In fact, in here there is a letter from the Department of Defense stating that they were doing mind control and that they were trying to develop, and here is number one of them, substances which will promote illogical thinking and impulsiveness to the point where the recipient would be discredited in public. Now, we have a lot of drugs right now that are being talked about that when you give them to people, it causes them to do things they shouldn't do. Well, this is exactly what they were doing under MKUltra, which, by the way, they did not have a religious experience in 1977 like they say they did. They continued to do Operation MKUltra under a number of other projects, and now it's all been sort of centralized under DARPA, which is a Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. So they created all of these tests, which were then used on people in Vietnam also. Thus, we had the drug that we talk about in the documentary called BZ. BZ is an hallucinogenic drug that does not have effects that last like LSD for a few days. They last for a few weeks.
They're long-term.
Exactly.
Long-term results. And I don't know if anyone out there has seen, it's a film from many years ago called Jacob's Ladder, and you mention it in the film, written by screenwriter Bruce Joel Rubin. And I saw that film years ago, and it's amazing that now when you reference that in Beyond Treason, it's like a light bulb went on in my head. I said, I saw that movie, but I really didn't understand the connection to reality. I mean, it's a real life story. So if you want to get a taste of the beginning of how this affects people, I mean, going to see that movie or renting that film or DVD would be a good start, along with Beyond Treason, because it shows a personal side of how a person's life is affected.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've talked to a lot of Vietnam veterans, and when I go to veterans meetings, and we've had some really large ones where they want to come, they want to find out what happened to me. I've had them look me in the eye and say, look, I know Jacob's Ladder from the inside out. And that just chills me when I hear that. And when you see Jacob's Ladder, you'll understand. But the government had the nerve, the soullessness, if you will, of a group of people to take BZ and spray it over our troops, vis-a-vis our American aircraft. Spray it over our troops, and we wonder why we had such a high rate of friendly fire during Vietnam. If I've had guys tell me this, in our unit, all of a sudden, something happened. We didn't know what we were doing, and we all started shooting each other. Now, what kind of Department of, quote-unquote, defense would do this to their own men? A group of people that really does not care about the men. It cares about the future of what they can do to people, and they're going to use them as human guinea pigs. So, I mean, and I encourage each and every one of you who are questioning what I'm saying right now, go to Senate Report 103-97. You can just put it in your search engine and find it. And I want to repeat this. I want to burn this in everybody's brain, because during the past 50 years, hundreds of thousands of our military have been experimented upon without their knowledge or consent. That was a Senate Veterans Affairs hearing report. Now, did you ever see that in the mainstream news where the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee came out and said, oh my gosh, we need to tell everybody this? We need to let them know what we found? No. Senate Veterans Affairs Committee kept this hidden and kept these people in the dark as to why they were sick and why they had become ill and why many of them died as a result of the experiments done to them.
Wow. Well, another aspect of secret military projects perpetrated on our veterans has to do with experimental vaccines. Can you talk a little bit about that aspect of it? Because you had a personal, of course, experience with that.
Okay, let's look at how proprietary pharmaceutical companies get their vaccines. They have to test them. They have to have three trials, usually. Tertiary trials, they call them. So they're doing this testing. Where are they going to get their people from? Well, I never asked that question until I realized that basic training is one of the best ways to use a large group of people that are going to be trackable. Because isn't that the key? You have to have people that you can follow for however long is necessary to be able to find out what happens as a result of that vaccine. So the military is the perfect place. Thus, we have vaccine trials being done in basic training and boot camp. Now, each person listening that's been in boot camp or in basic training can tell you, man, I remember there were guys that just keeled over. There were guys that died. Our whole barrack got sick, and they told us it was just the flu or whatever. The vaccine trials are extremely important to proprietary pharmaceutical companies and the military. And there was a group called the Tri-Service Vaccine Task Force. It was under the direction of a colonel who had put up in 1990, a number of vaccine trials they wanted to do. Now, these documents have been declassified that I was able to obtain, and they are in, again, the CD-ROM. Now, there's probably 3,000 pages of documents that the DOD would just assume I didn't have that's in that CD-ROM that comes with Beyond Treason. And again, in the Tri-Service Vaccine Task Force committee hearings, you will see where they wanted to test anthrax, West Nile fever virus. Now, wait a second. West Nile fever virus. We didn't have any West Nile fever virus in the United States, or really it was no problem prior to the first Gulf War. What we learned then in another Senate hearing, 103-900, Senate Report 103-900, commonly called the Regal Report, which has been taken off the government printing office list, as has that MKUltra document, which, by the way, though, I got copies, and I've made copies, and I'm making them available to people for duplication cost, because I want people to actually see these documents to know that I'm not making this up. But in the Regal Report, they list a group of biologicals and chemicals that were sold to Iraq prior to the first Gulf War. Now, the U.S. government, along with a company called ATCC, or American Type Culture Collection. Now, you can go on the website, you can go to the internet to atcc.com, and that's where people buy biologicals. Well, ATCC has been involved with the U.S. government for a long time in experiments back to the 1960s that I can track. Well, the U.S. government sold without any hesitation to a country that was not exactly a friend of ours. As you know, Iraq was not a friendly country to the United States. And in the middle 1980s, after Rumsfeld went over and made his visit with Saddam Hussein, by the way, Rumsfeld at that time was not working for the Department of Defense. Do you know offhand, Randall, who he was working for?
Yeah, he was the president of J.D. Searle. We've actually talked about that before in a previous program, which actually created the chemical sweetener NutraSweet, or aspartame.
Right.
And so when I saw that, and then all of a sudden now he's in the higher echelons of the government, I thought, there's definitely something wrong with this picture.
Yes. Now, remember that when he went over there in 1981, he went over in December of 81, I believe it was, or 82, 81, and met with Saddam Hussein when that famous picture was taken where he's shaking hands.
That's right.
He was at that time not an envoy for the U.S. government, not an official envoy for the U.S. government. He was, like you said, the president and CEO of G.D. Searle. They were talking about the transfer and sale of biological and chemical agents. Now, there's a book out that will verify all of this called Twin Pillars of Desert Storm. And I encourage people to look at the background material, because I'm not the first one that's figured this out. But I have figured it out, and I will stand any time, any place, and debate the Department of Defense. In fact, I've challenged them many times. And
you've testified before in Senate committee hearings or congressional hearings. Am I correct in that?
The Presidential Advisory Committee hearing in which I testified. And an interesting thing, just as a side note, to show you how serious the DOD is about what I'm saying. I was supposed to speak at a college in Michigan. I went up there to Michigan, and the night I was supposed to speak, they called me into the room and said, we need to tell you something. The DOD has contacted us three times asking us not to allow you to speak. And I said, well, really? I said, how interesting. I said, what is your decision? They said, well, we think that if they're going to ask us three times not to let you talk, we need to find out what it is that you have to say. So I went on the program, and I said, fantastic. They said, but we need to tell you something else. The DOD just flew in a private plane of three people that are in that audience tonight, three officers that are in that audience from the Secretary of Defense's office. And I said, fantastic. Now, this is the offensive position that I take, is I'm not afraid of the truth, and the truth will make us free. I walked onto the stage, and I said, how many of you here are students? How many of you are professors? How many of you were paid to be here tonight? And nobody raised their hand. So I said, well, I understand that there are three people here from the Department of Defense, and I said, I'd like to honor those that are here and recognize them tonight. No hands went up. I said, well, let me repeat. I'm only a captain, and I understand Colonel Thompson is here from the Pentagon, and so I would like to have you recognized. And I said, I'm not going to continue until I can recognize the people that are here to hear what I have to say. So finally, three little hands went up in the back of the room very slowly. And I said, gentlemen, I said, I am going to say the most damning information that has ever been said anywhere regarding the Department of Defense. And I said, I am going to show your documents to prove what I am saying. And if there is anything here that is inaccurate or wrong in any way, shape, or form, I want you to stop me. And if you do not, they will stand as correct. And I began, and I went through document after document, just like I'm talking with you here today. Document after document, because I said, I'm not messing around. I am not kidding. Our soldiers' lives are at stake. And I said, that is far more important than you, your job, your reputation, whatever. And part of those documents were on the vaccines that we're talking about. But I will tell you that not once did they stop me that night. And the minute it was over with, they hustled out of there so fast because they didn't want to talk to anybody. The next day, the DOD asked for a separate news conference in which they could address what I had to say without me there. And there was an investigative reporter there, a real one, who after listening to the Dog and Pony Show from the Department of Defense stood up and said, sir, I think I need to tell you something, or ask the question. Ms. Riley last night said that the U.S. sold biologicals and chemicals to Iraq in the 1960s. Is that correct? And he began to dance around. He was in the Air Force, so he was a blue blur from the waist down dancing there. And she said, no, sir, I need to stop you and tell you that I don't think there's one person in this audience that's believing a thing you're saying. And immediately the hook came out from the side of the curtain, and they said, oh, they've got to get back to the DOD. They've had an emergency. And they left. Now, that's the kind of treatment that we need to give these people and stand up to them. I'm just a nurse. I am just a captain. And I will stand up to them anytime, any place, because they are literally killing our military. And with the vaccines, using them for these guinea pig trials, when they know the anthrax vaccine is bad, they know that they are many of them are contaminated, and yet they continue to do it. So there are a number of vaccines that were used in the first Gulf War. Some of them we know, some of them we don't know. Doctors were told to give them a plain vial with no writing on it. The doctors went ahead and did it. They shouldn't have done that. But they gave the anthrax vaccine, they gave the botulinum vaccine, and we don't know what else, because now many of the Gulf War veterans, of course, have AIDS-like symptoms in which we think something called squalene, an adjuvant called squalene, was used in the vaccines. Now, that's used to make the vaccine more potent, but it's also used in AIDS vaccines. And my concern, and my real concern is, and I am alleging, and I believe that a type of the AIDS vaccine was used in one of its trials for Gulf War veterans, because we have so many AIDS-like symptoms coming from the Gulf War troops. So the vaccines were a huge problem. Now, the reason I know that my illness and disease came from vaccines is because I did not deploy to the Middle East, which was my first clue of, wait a minute, I think this is the problem, at least for me. It wasn't for everybody, because they had other symptoms and other problems, which is why the Defense Department gets away with saying there's not one illness. There is not one Gulf War illness. No, there's several versions of it. And unfortunately, I don't think we'll ever know all that is wrong with our troops.
Well, I can tell you that there is much more to be said on the subject. We're going to take a short break here, Joyce, if you'll just hang on. Everyone, we'll return in just a couple minutes. And more with Spirit of Film Conversations and this powerful film, Beyond Treason, right after this break. Stay with us.
Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The last great frontier is the magnificent mystery of the mind. Abundant evidence demonstrates that we have far more talents than we realize, and that our minds are exceptional instruments we can learn to use more fully, just as we'd learn to play a piano or a clarinet. Tune in to The Music of Your Mind, Living the Extraordinary, Thursday mornings at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the 7th Wave Network, and learn more about how you can hear the wonderful music of your mind.
Create a life with growth, balance, abundant peace of mind, and joy. Tune in and call into Spirits Evolving with pragmatic psychic and certified hypnotherapist, Lee Channing. By using the simple tools for growth offered by Lee, including intuition, color awareness, creative visualization, and more, build a stronger understanding of your own energy and offer clear, unencumbered energy to those with whom you share your life. Whether for an individual or a business, home environment, or your office, Lee evaluates and interacts with the energy at hand, providing an analysis of the problem and a description of the options available to move forward successfully and with grace. Spirits Evolving with Lee Channing, broadcast each Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the 7th Wave Network, your online community for positive change. Spirits Evolving, your guide toward a life filled with more balance, intention, and contentment.
Reiki, balancing form and essence. Hosted by Reiki Master Phyllis Lee Forimoto, brings to the 7th Wave Network this worldwide human art form. Join Phyllis every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time as she shares her experiences from around the globe and helps you to understand the effects of living in conscious relationship with the energy of Reiki. Reiki, balancing form and essence. Every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the 7th Wave Network.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Spirit of Film Conversations. I'm your host, Randall Libero. We're talking this week about a very powerful motion picture called Beyond Treason, and we have with us as our guest the writer and producer of that motion picture, Ms. Joyce Riley. Joyce, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Randall.
You can find out more about the topic we're talking about today and the film we're talking about today at a couple of websites, so let me give those. One is beyondtreason.com. That's the website for the motion picture. And another one is gulfwarvets.com. Is that correct, Joyce?
That's correct. Uh-huh.
Gulfwarvets.com. And you can also keep track of some of the other things that Joyce is doing. She's actually a co-host of a radio show called The Power Hour. So you can check that out online at thepowerhour.com. Before we get back into the film, just tell our audience a little bit about your radio show.
Well, our radio show is neither left or right because both sides are screwed up. And that's kind of the way we look at it. Neither side is pure as a driven snow. And we need to look at what are the real issues. And the real issues right now are not the financial, whether or not we're in a recession, like they want to debate back and forth, but the fact that our money system, be that the Federal Reserve, is the major problem. So we look at the real issues. Is the IRS legal? Is it not? And a lot of these things that we get into are highly, I would say they're like a hot potato for most people. A lot of people don't want to deal with these issues. But my husband and I, Dave Von Kleist, who did 9/11 ripple effect and 9/11 in plain sight. He's been big on exposing the 9/11 issue. We feel like it's about time this country addressed the real issues. You know, I'd like to all hold hands and, you know, and sing and live in a happy world, but it's not that way right now. And So much of what we do is basically empowering people to know the truth, just like what happened with the veterans issue. And, you know, Randall, I commend you on addressing the subject of the veterans and their sicknesses and illnesses and experiments, because a lot of people have the attitude of, well, you joined the military, you got what you signed up for, and you should have known, and that's what happens when people kill people. And you know, I agree. I really do agree. But we didn't know. It's just like when I was a nurse, an RN, and I was giving electroshock therapy. They told me that was the best thing for these people, that that's the only thing that they have. That's the way I felt when I was a chemo nurse. That's all these people have is chemotherapy. So, you know, I bought into it. I was ignorant. I was naive. And now I'm having to pay for that. But now I'm on the other side of it, looking at it and saying, thank you to people like you who will address this subject and realize that if we experiment on the military, then that means they can experiment on the civilian population, which is exactly what has happened. And if I could just bridge that for a second and move into a document that the U.S. government published and then took off their government printing office list. But again, we do have copies of it at the Power Hour, and that's thepowerhour.com. It's a document entitled Biological Testing Involving Human Subjects by the Department of Defense. It's a 1977 document, and it was a hearing before the Subcommittee on Health and Scientific Research. And in this document, it states and lists all the experiments done around the country on our people, city by city, what agents were used, how they were sprayed. And let me just give you a few of the names of the people that sat on this committee that never came forward and told you about it. Edward Kennedy from Massachusetts. Alan Cranston, California. Donald Regal, Michigan. Jacob Javits, New York. Richard Swiker. I mean, these are all names people know. Orrin Hatch of Utah. S.I. Hayakawa, California. These people knew full well what was going on here and never told the American people. And these are experiments, for instance, in Pennsylvania, in the Kittatinny and Tuscarora tunnels. When people would drive through these tunnels, they had machines set up to spray them with bacteria. When they went through the tunnels, they would get sprayed, and then they would either get sick, they would have to go to the doctor, or they would die. And they would follow these people and determine whether or not their experiments worked. And, of course, the biggest experiment is the one that happened in San Francisco, in which they sprayed Serratia marcescens 50 miles inland in San Francisco. And, yes, people died as a result of that. But they did it in the name of the greater good. That's what they called it. They did it because, oh, this will help us in defensive weapon testing. No, it was all about offensive weapon testing. So the civilians had been infected by this just as much as the military. They use the military as the testing agents more so up front, and then it moves into the civilian community. And that's what we have got to stop. Now, there is, in United States Code Annotated, and one time I was on Coast to Coast one night and told Art Bell, I said, you know, the government put it in United States Code Annotated that it's okay to experiment on the American people without their consent. And Art, we went to a break then, and he said, Joyce, what did you just say? And I told him. He said, you have to be kidding me. And I said, no, it's true, Art. It is okay for them to experiment upon us without consent. And he said, this would be the biggest news I've ever heard. And I gave them the site, and I will give you all the site, too. Title 50, and that's United States Code Annotated, Title 50, Chapter 32, Section 1520A. Now, 1520 was the original one, which was repealed in 1997 after I made such a big stink of this on the Art Bell Show. But when they repealed it, they made it look like they were repealing it, but they only made it stronger. So, again, let me give you that site because it's extremely important that you see that your government can experiment upon you without your knowledge or consent. Title 50, Chapter 32, Section 1520A.
And so people, they could search for that online and find it?
Sure. Just put in Title 50, Chapter 32, Section 1520A. Or if you go to GulfWarVets.com, it's on. You put it in the search engine, it'll bring it right up. So, you know, we're not talking about conspiracy theory here. Although, when I started doing this, I don't know, being that you were in the media at that time, when you were with CBS, I don't know that you got all the bad intel on Joyce Riley. But But they had the Southern Poverty Law Center putting out information that I was a terrorist. They literally put me in a magazine, my picture. I was in a red, white, and blue jacket talking to veterans in Idaho, and or in Washington State, and they sent out a notice to all law enforcement agencies that I was a terrorist or that I was to be considered a potential terrorist. Now imagine that. A nurse who's been a heart, lung, liver, kidney transplant nurse, a flight nurse in the Air Force, and they did this surreptitiously until I found out from an FBI agent who called me and told me what they were trying to do. So I called my local FBI and I met with them and I said, what do you guys think you're doing? They were Domestic Terrorism Task Force. And I could tell you a whole long story, but he came to a meeting that I did for veterans because he said, well, then let me see what you're doing. I took him to a meeting in Denver that I was doing, and he ended up in tears. Because when I was talking to these vets, they would come up to me and they would hug me afterwards. And the Vietnam vets would say, Jules, I just wish there was a nurse like you after Vietnam for us, like you were doing for the Gulf War veterans. I mean, they were so grateful. They said, thank you, thank you, thank you. And the FBI agent was literally in tears. And he said, is this what you do? I said, yeah, this is the terrorism that I do. It's the terrorism they're afraid of because I'm telling the truth about what the Department of Defense did.
Well, I want to cover some, before we run out of time here, we only got about another 15 minutes or so. I want to cover some of the highlights of your film, what I can call them highlights, but just mention some facts and figures that you put forward, and when people watch the motion picture, they can, of course, learn more. During the Gulf War, the illness disabled 250,000 veterans. And now the fact that you bring up in this movie, just so people remember, okay, remember back to the Gulf War, all right? This was a war that lasted for about 100 hours, about only 150 troops died, 150 soldiers died as during the battle, okay, very small amount. But afterwards, almost 500,000 of them died as a result of Gulf War illness, which is a whole multiple, there's so many things that go into that, as you mentioned. It's not just one thing. And the military is still fighting on this. And their position to this day is still that it doesn't exist. Am I not correct in that?
That's correct. Now, the 500,000 figure is between the mortality and morbidity statistics, the deaths and illnesses of those troops. Now, that figure has risen to where we think it's more close to about 600,000 now. But given the fact that there were 697,000 troops that served, and you mentioned the figure of 150, and remember, half of those were friendly fire. So we really only lost about 75, but then we weren't fighting a real army either. We weren't fighting a real military. We were told they were, but it wasn't. So in the event, though, that you consider we had 697,000 troops, to have nearly 500,000 or 600,000 of them sick after that war, anybody ought to be asking the question, what happened? Well, that's the part the DOD doesn't want to address, and that's the part that they kept denying. But it is a huge figure, and if we move into the second Gulf War, the statistics are even higher, I think, right now for the number of people that have gone to the VA who have gotten out of the military. And I will tell you that Senator Wellstone, in about 1995, 96, somewhere around there, just prior to his death, his office confirmed to me, because we were trading information, we were saying, you tell me what you know, I'll tell you what I know. That office said that Senator Wellstone stated that about 75% of the people that had served in the Gulf War were out by 1995. Now, think about that. A war is fought with people that are usually professional soldiers. You don't have a group of soldiers just up and leave the military after the war. Well, that's what happened after Desert Storm, and that's what happened after Desert Storm 2 or the Gulf War 2, because soldiers are so sick they cannot stay in the military. So it's, you know, the illnesses are a huge problem, and the deaths of these people, the affecting of their spouses, it's just gotten to be overwhelmingly unbelievable the amount of illness as a result of that war.
Okay, I want to cover a few other things that we're going to now. I want everybody to listen to what we're going to say now very carefully, because this is very powerful information. It affects what's happening today in our world, what's happening today in Iraq. We're going to go into a couple of things. First of all, you mentioned in the film that between 1984 and 1989, the U.S. government sold to Iraq, sold and transferred, $4 billion worth of chemical agents. These are weapons of mass destruction that were sold to Iraq. Now, a lot of media coverage went into saying that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Yeah, we sold it to them. Hello, wake up to reality, folks. That's why they have it. Another thing that you mentioned is according to a UN human rights report that 17 countries have purchased depleted uranium weaponry from the United States. Now, is that comment on that briefly?
Well, that is true, and I think it's even more countries by now because they're going to depleted uranium weapons, which is a byproduct of it is the natural uranium or the uranium enrichment process. And I think even more countries have it now. But just about everything, I don't care whether it's a 50 caliber, 30 caliber shell, the bunker buster bombs, they all contain depleted uranium. And that's mostly what our ammunition is now. And it has a half-life. It's radioactive. It has a half-life of 4.5 billion years. And therein lies the problem.
So when soldiers are shooting at the enemy, so to speak, they're also firing a depleted uranium charge at the same time?
It's got a depleted uranium core. For instance, let me just give you an example. The A-10 aircraft, the Warthog, that shoots a 30-millimeter shell or 9-millimeter shell, and it is shoots 4,000 rounds per minute. 4,000 rounds per minute going into the ground over there, and that's the big aircraft used in Iraq. So you're talking about just drilling the ground, the water, and the food supply with billions of particles, billions and billions of particles of depleted uranium.
Well, let me put this in a very clear picture for everyone. What we are accusing Iraq, or possibly the reason we went to war, is because we were in fear of that they would use weapons of mass destruction against us, which is exactly what we're doing to them.
Bingo. We're doing that in spades to them. We have taken not only chemicals and biologicals that we have used on Iraq, but the depleted uranium, which is far worse, because it affects, according to some physicians, up to 7 generations of progeny are going to be affected by this depleted uranium. You watch on CNN, you see all these babies they're bringing over that are malformed, and they've got a child that's got 3 arms, or a child that has this or that. That's depleted uranium, and that's why we show the pictures of those babies, which I hated doing that. I did not want to do that.
Yeah, that was a pretty awful part of the movie.
It is, but we have to let the people see what we are doing in our name to these people.
And I also want to bring up another point, since we're getting short on time here, about another 8 or 9 minutes. During, comment briefly about this, during, I think it was, you mentioned 1990, or December 2002, there was an international criminal tribunal for Afghanistan that was held in Tokyo. And basically, these hearings lasted for a year, and they charged President George W. Bush with 31 counts of war crimes.
Yes.
Comment on that for a bit.
Yes, they were charged with war crimes. The Department of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, Ed Al, were charged with war crimes. I'm sorry, not Donald Rumsfeld, but a number of people in that administration were charged because of the use of those weapons. Now, Japan even carried the story, putting the story out on the front page of their newspaper, but the U.S. never covered it. And depleted uranium is, of course, being argued as to, it's just like the argument of, red wine good for you, is red wine bad for you? Is coffee good for you, is coffee bad for you? Is depleted uranium good for you, is it bad for you? And they keep trying to project the idea that it's okay, there's no problem, and covering their backsides because they're going to have casualties in the hundreds of thousands as a result of this war.
Okay, I want to get to one more thing, but on this tribunal, think about World War II and Nuremberg, folks, because this is the same thing. It was never covered here. The Nuremberg trials were covered internationally, but this tribunal was not covered in American media. It just shows you that We're not showing the whole picture here, folks.
Randall, and you want to hear something even worse. In 1991, there was a war crimes tribunal that was held, and 83 countries were involved in it. Oh, and Ramsey goodness. Clark was the chief investigator on that, and that was never covered in the United States either. 83 countries found George Bush Sr. guilty of war crimes.
Right. Okay, I want to cover one more thing. We haven't even gotten to talking about anthrax and telling the story about how we actually met when I was writing a story for CBS Radio. But just to give people a really clear picture of how, you know, the media is controlled. Here's a quick story. I interviewed Joyce back in 2000. When was that? 2001, right before 9/11. And we talked, and I recorded the story. It wasn't set for putting it up on the CBS browser yet at that time. So I finished it. I was editing it, and I talked to my superior, and I told him the shocking information that Joyce related to me. I couldn't believe it. I'd never heard this before. And you also told me about a Department of Defense website that said anthrax, a national vaccination program or something like that. There was actually a website that I went to.
Mm-hmm.
So this was National Anthrax Vaccination Program, which was a program that would be perpetrated unknowingly on the citizens of the United States. And I saw that site was really there, and I went, holy mackerel. So I went to my supervisor, and I told him what I had found. We were standing outside of the men's room, and I said, listen to this. The next day, I was working on the national... this was after 9/11. I was working on the international desk. The next day, I was taken off the national international desk in a very strange meeting. At all the heads of the news division were there, and I was put on the state desk, and I was never allowed to write a national news story again.
Whoa. That just breaks my heart to hear that, because that is the tactics that are used, and you had to be the unwitting victim of the truth. How sad that is.
Yeah, that's sad. That's very sad. Well, luckily, I got to write about 9/11, which at some point, maybe on your show next week, we can cover a little bit more what happened with that story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I want to talk about one more thing before we run out of time. I want to talk about the Camisea bunker. This puts it into straight black and white for people. And talk about Sergeant Dan Topolsky and how he actually found a bunker. And there's film of this in your movie that shows on the outside of the, you know, the crates, there's, in English, okay, markings on these crates. Just tell a little bit about the story. It starts off with General Schwarzkopf contradicted himself about what they actually found in this bunker. But Sergeant Topolsky, God bless him, he went on, and he's in your movie, and you heard what his story is, his side of the story. So talk a little bit about this, because this is when they said they were looking for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and they couldn't find any. You know what? They knew exactly where they were, and you show them in your motion picture. So talk about this.
When General Schwarzkopf went before the committee hearing to testify, he was not given the sworn in. He was not sworn in. Neither was Colin Powell. They were the only two that were not sworn in. When they began to talk, they completely denied anything, but he contraindicated himself because he said, first of all, he says, no, I never heard of Camisea till 1996. Then a little bit later on, he says, oh, yeah, well, this is the situation I'm telling you about right now. That was Camisea. And we knew about that at the time. What Camisea was a bunker complex about the size of 100 Walmarts. I mean, it was a huge bunker complex. And at that time, the U.S. government knew full well where Iraq had taken the weapons that were sold to them by U.S., the U.K., and transshipped through Jordan into Iraq. All the weapons, the chemical biological weapons, were stored in these bunkers, and there were several of these bunker depot areas. After the war, the word was given to destroy those bunker complexes, not because they wanted to get rid of the weapons, but because they didn't want people to find the names of the U.S. and the U.K. on these weapons in the bunker complexes. So Sergeant Topolsky was given the order to lead the detonation at Camisea. And when he did, he was told not to have them wear their MOP gear. Now, this was a week-long activity because it was such a huge detonation project. And so one of the people took in a video camera, and thus we have the evidence from inside that bunker complex, which the DOD is not very happy about. Now, Sergeant Topolsky, when he was told to stand down and tell his men not to wear their chemical gear, he said, "What are you thinking?" He said, "There's chemical weapons in there. There's biological weapons in there. They're color-coded." And he told his men and defied the colonel's order and said, "Go to MOP 4, his men. But as you will see in some of the pictures there, you'll see men that had shirt sleeves on that didn't go to MOP 4. That bunker detonation took a week to prepare for and a week to detonate. And they finally detonated the whole thing. These men breathed that stuff in constantly, and many of them are ill. The DOD then released a statement saying, "Oh my goodness, we just found out this happened and 100,000 people got exposed to chemical weapons." Did they compensate them? No. They later denied that it was a problem and said, and disallowed when we asked to have Sergeant Topolsky come in and see the recreation of this. They disallowed, the DOD did, Sergeant Topolsky to be there, and he was in charge of the whole thing.
Wow. That is, when I saw that for the first time, where you actually, you know, you the color coding on these crates, and I saw the men in there, and, you know, that this was detonated and destroyed. They were destroying the evidence that they had sold them weapons. And you see on the crates, you see in English, and you see that they're shipped from Jordan, England, Russia, and the United States. Mm-hmm. And it's clear as a bell. And General Schwarzkopf was saying, "Oh, it's in Arabic. I don't know. Our guys couldn't read it. I couldn't read it. I couldn't tell you." No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. There was not one weapon in Arabic because the Arabic people don't make any of those weapons. So, you know, the whole thing was a lie. But you see, that's how they cover up, is by one lie that has to support another. And they continue with these lies over and over and over again. And I'll tell you, Sergeant Topolsky says right there, "General Schwarzkopf, you know, you are not a hero." And his bodyguard, by the way, his chief bodyguard, his bodyguard is the one who said, "General Schwarzkopf, you are not a hero. You are allowing your men to die." And that was his bodyguard, Kevin Wright, out of Ohio, that I interviewed. And then later Schwarzkopf denied that he was ever his bodyguard, which just absolutely destroyed Kevin Wright.
Well, Joyce, I have to stop you right there. Unfortunately, we're getting close to being out of time. Again, everyone, you can find out more information about this powerful movie, beyondtreason.com, or actually you can go to gulfwarvets.com. You can look it up on, I recommend highly that you get Joyce's DVD and buy the movie and spread it around, because it has the additional CD-ROM in there that you can actually see the documents for yourself. Of course, you can also watch it online, but really support Joyce's cause by purchasing the film. Joyce, thanks so much for being with us today. I can't even begin to tell you how grateful I am that you're on the show.
Thank you, and I look forward to having you on our show next week, because we're going to hear the other side.
Right,
the
other side, Monday.
Side
Monday at 8 o'clock. Is that Pacific time or Eastern time?
That's Central time.
Central time, 8 o'clock Central time, thepowerhour.com. You'll be able to hear more, and we'll continue our conversation then. Well,
thanks
everyone for listening for today to Spirit of Film Conversations. And remember, you're the writer, producer, and director and star of your own movie that's called Your Life. So make it a blockbuster and it'll be a classic. Until next time, I'm Randall Barrow for Spirit of Film Conversations. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.